the advice and recommendation educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional before beginning or changing any course of health treatment. From the studios of News Talk 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall at cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Hello, I'm Giuseppe. I got something special for you. Ready? Uno, due, tre, quattro. When I was a boy, just about the 8th grade, Mama used to say, don't stay out late with the bad boys. Always shoot the pool, Giuseppe going to flunk a school. Boy, it making me sick, all the thing I gotta do. I can't get no kicks, I always got to follow rules. Boy, it making me sick, just to make the lousy bucks. Got to feel like a fool, and the mama used to say all the time, what's the matter with you? Hey, got no respect. What do you think you do? Why you look so sad? It's not so bad. It's a nicer place. Ah, shut up your face. That's my mom, I can remember. Big accordion solo. Ow! Play that thing. Really nice, really nice. But soon come a day, gonna be a bigger star. Then I make a TV shows and the movies. Get myself a new car, but still I be myself. I don't want it to change a thing. Still I dance and I sing. I think about the mama, she used to say, what's the matter you? Hey, God, no respect. What do you think you do? Why you look so sad? It's not so bad. It's a nicer place. Ah, shut up your face. Mama, she said it all of the time. What's the matter you? Hey, God, no respect. What do you think you do? Why you look so sad? It's not so bad. It's a nicer place.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 852 of Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. It is September 25th, 2022. We're broadcasting live from the studios of News Talk 580 CFRA here in Ottawa, taking your calls very shortly at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And you can send your comments and questions at 580-580. So I wanted to talk today about profanity, personal attacks, people being brought to tears, emotional distress that is happening to our staff in our office and likely other offices as well. People are calling up, screaming and yelling at our staff. Now, many people are polite, but it doesn't take many to ruin your day, to cause distress, and especially if you start swearing and attacking, personally attacking with vile, and I mean vile words, towards female staff. You get the idea of what I'm talking about. And staff needs to take a time and a break afterwards because they are shaking and rattled by the behavior. Now, our staff are part of our healthcare team, and the actions that are directed towards our staff, people in first contact, right? People are calling the desk, calling reception, calling our nurses. Actions directed towards them, they are part of the healthcare team, are no different than if you were saying this directly to your physician or nurse. That is the policy that we take. And I can't speak for other offices, but I'm sure they look at it very similarly because usually there is a sign saying that we do not accept that kind of behavior. Now, the behavior stems from frustration. The frustration stems from the difficulty of getting appointments. And in this case, it happened to be we have urgent care services on the weekend that run from 10 till 1 on Saturday and Sunday, and there are only a certain number of slots. And so when people call up, there's only a limited number. that can get in for that day. That's just the way it is. There's nothing we can do about that. And to compound it, the Ministry of Health has decreed as of this past July 1st that you have to have on your 3-hour block, you have to have 3 15-minute appointments that are considered to be pre-booked. That is, booked ahead of time. You can't book them on that day. So if it's you have three hours on Saturday, 45 minutes, 3 15-minute appointments, you cannot book them on the Saturday. They have to be booked earlier in the week. Therefore, urgent care only has 9 slots left instead of 12. So you've reduced it by 25%. And that's the Ministry of Health that has decreed this, right? That is what they have said that we have to do. So any complaints that you have with regards to access, I would suggest respectfully that you call your MPPs and just talk to them about how difficult it is. But further, and this is our policy in our office, and I can't speak for anybody else, but our front staff do a lot. And we get complaints saying, oh, they're rude. They're not rude. I hear how they try to communicate stuff. People perceive that they're rude because they're not getting what they want. And again, it's not everybody. Lots of patients, I'd say the majority, are polite, respectful, understand the situation, understand that we are understaffed, understand that demands are through the roof, and that it is very difficult to try to accommodate. It becomes especially difficult to accommodate when people do not show up for their appointments either. And I've talked about this before, but that hasn't changed much because this past week on my Monday, I had 1 hour and 45 minutes of appointments where people didn't show up, didn't call ahead of time to say they wouldn't show up. And as a result, we could not book 7 other people into that hour and 45 minutes ahead of time because of the actions of those that did not show up. You can't dismiss patients when they do that. You can't punish patients to do that. You can send them a bill to pay for the time. And if they refuse to pay, you can't refuse to see them. That's under college guidelines. So your hands are kind of tied with regards to trying to alter that kind of behavior. But what we are doing, and what we will now be even doing more earnestly, because it is distressing to me to see my staff affected this way. You become protective of people that are loyal to you, that are trying to do the job, best job they possibly can under trying circumstances. And so if someone is abusive and the interactions are recorded, so this is not just a hearsay thing, right? We have the ability to record the conversation, so we are able to review it. So it's not just this person said X to me and was abusive. Okay, let's hear the recording. And if that is indeed the case, that constitutes disrespectful behavior to the practice, not just the person themselves, which includes the physician. And disrespect towards the physician is a breach of the doctor-patient relationship. And as such, those patients that behave in that way will be summarily dismissed from our practice. They will be given 30 to 60 days notice and told that they are no longer able to come to our practice anymore. We are working the best that we can. We are trying to accommodate the best that we can under circumstances of which we have had no control. And for people to swear, direct personal, vile words at staff, all because they are being told that, unfortunately, we do not have an appointment time for the same day for you, is unacceptable. But unlike politicians that tend to say things are unacceptable and then just keep on moving on, unacceptable for us has a consequence. And that consequence is that you are no longer going to be a patient in our practice. Because I am sure that there are many other people desperate to find family doctors who do not behave this way. And so if you decide to continue to behave that way and treat our staff poorly, remember, when you speak to staff, you are speaking to your physician or nurse as well. And if you are being disrespectful and swearing, you're gone. End of story. People can be frustrated. We're frustrated as well. But there are limits. And the limit is, how can anybody establish a proper relationship and try to help someone if they are swearing at you, if they are treating you with disrespect? It just doesn't work. And because of that, there is no contract for trust. There is no respectful relationship based on the behavior. And as such, the central tenet of being able to provide care to your patients is based on that contract for trust and respect. And if it's been breached, it's been breached. And you are no longer a patient. That's just how it works. So that's what we have been experiencing. That is what has made it so difficult for many to want to continue to even work in healthcare. And I don't blame them. But if you, by your actions, are causing distress to our staff, and our staff are unable to work or find it extremely difficult to carry on, and they leave, it's very difficult to find well-trained staff to replace them so quickly. And not that I want to do that, but that's the consequence of this kind of thing, that you have a diminishing return, that people end up leaving. They don't want to work in an environment where they're being yelled at, and who can blame anybody for that? And as a result, it'll take even longer to get through. It'll take even longer to book appointments. And the spiral continues. So if you're frustrated, understand that you're frustrated. If you're having difficulty getting an appointment, we have at our office, you can send an email directly in, and that email will get through to the physician. The physician will see if they can do something to either call you or arrange something. There are always ways to try to fix things. It may not be immediate, but there are always ways to try to accommodate. But it may not be the way you would want it to be in terms of being seen right away. It just is too difficult now to be able to do that for everyone. And the use of our services this week, we have people who came in for colds, and 2 days later came back in an urgent care for the same cold. Not any worse, just basically saying, why do I still have my symptoms? So there has to be a little onus of responsibility on patients to understand that when you have come in, you have been diagnosed, you have been explained to that this is a cold, it is not a bacterial infection, it's not anything that's going to get worse, that you'll likely have symptoms that continue for 7 to 10 days, sometimes longer, that there's no need to come back in and take more time away from someone who needs to come in as well. So there is some responsibility on both sides to this. But at the same time, just chill out. I'm Dr. Barry DeWorken. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in just a couple of minutes. talk, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is the long distance number, and you can text us your comments and questions at 580-580. We'll get to some of those questions in a sec because one of the callers is pretty much asking the same thing, so we can probably cover all those at the same time. We're going to go to line one first and speak to Lois. Hello, Lois.
Good afternoon, Dr. Dork.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. I had a question.
Sure.
I had a 45-minute spinal MRI on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And could you explain the noises I heard?
Yeah.
Is the machine taking pictures?
So the noises from an MRI are the process of the magnets. It's a high, the noise is because of how the machine works. It creates very strong magnetic fields. And so that's the noise that you are hearing. It's just the process, the machinery that's doing that. So the pictures that it is taking, the way MRIs work is that the magnetic fields, because it's not radiation, so there's no X-rays involved, but the magnetic fields change the, I'm trying to make this as straightforward as possible. The atoms and the molecules in your body will respond to the magnetic field and sort of line up. You know when you have a compass and you put a magnetic field, the compass will turn in a particular direction to point?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's what happens with the molecules in your body, in your cells. They will line up and then the magnetic field changes, and so you can watch and see what happens when those fields change. And so those changes are reflected in the tissue and you can make a picture of that. And that's why you can, so that's sort of really simplifying it, but that's how it works for the most part. It uses magnetism to change and alter the direction of the molecules in the cells so that when the magnetic field changes, the cells will also react the same way and it'll show up on the scan.
Doctor receive in 7 days?
Yeah, so they'll receive a report that outlines if there's any damage to the spine, if there's any narrowing of the spine, any nerves that are being pinched, what the bones look like, if the discs are damaged, if there's any scarring that's noted. So there's a lot of things that the MRI will be able to tell them, especially in relation to the question that was usually put on the requisition saying, you know, patient has this condition or this kind of pain in this area, and they'll focus and look in that area to see if there was anything that can explain the symptoms that the patient's experiencing.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Lois. Take care. We're going to go to line two and speak to Peter. Hi, Peter.
Hi, doctor. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thanks. So my question is around level of the thoughts on our latest research on immunity from having COVID. I've had three shots,
yeah.
March, June, and December, and then I had COVID late June.
Okay.
And so where are we at?
Yes. So
in regards to that.
Yes, that's a really good question. So having had the infection likely acted like another booster for you. Hopefully it wasn't too severe. Was it okay? How did you do?
It wasn't on the mild side, but it, you know, I wrote it out and
okay.
knocked me down for a couple of weeks, but
right.
Recovered.
Yeah, so it likely gave you a bit of a boost. What we understand to date is that having the infection can give you a bit of a boost, but it doesn't not necessarily long lasting. And it's very similar to the vaccines, where we're not sure how long it lasts. Especially if people, for example, have only had two doses. You've had three plus the infection. What I would say is that if this was back, you said in June, this was in June that you had the infection?
Yeah, late June, towards the end of June.
Okay, so now we're dealing with 3 months later. The same logic would apply. You'd consider that to be almost like your fourth dose. And then the next thing are the ones that'll be the bivalent vaccines, right, which will cover some of the variants. Now, I've had some of the comments come in today saying, one is asking, can you confirm what was said that the covalent vaccine approved by Health Canada targets BA1, which is not the most common? And also another person is saying a most common variant and that the vaccine available in the USA targets BA4 and 5. Yes, so that's absolutely correct. Health Canada has only approved the BA1 variant, which really isn't seen very much now. It tends to be the BA5, which is running, at least from the latest reports, more so in the United States and Canada. And so I'm, and a lot of other physicians are kind of wondering why they didn't approve the BA4 and 5 version. One of the explanations given was that because they didn't test this in people per se, that they didn't want to approve that. But really for the flu shots, we do the same thing where the process of producing the flu shots has been the same forever. And so they simply are choosing the parts of it that tend to be what we think is going to be coming our way. So just as for the mRNA vaccines, they've already perfected that. And so it's a matter of just producing a different protein, which is what they've done. The recipe was changed a bit to produce the protein, but really it's the same kind of vaccine. It's the same technology. So so my answer to that, one of the listeners has sent that in, is that I plan to go down to the United States and get the BA4 and BA5 variant vaccine. My last dose was in June. I've had 4 doses, so we're pretty much equivalent. You've had 3 plus being ill. And so I plan to go down for that just so that I have coverage from the one that's circulating around, because there's no guarantee that you're protected from that as completely as we'd like you to be.
And as far as, so it's been 3 months duration before I get the next booster, you know, I think.
Yeah.
I think I'm eligible to get it now.
Yes, you are.
But can I, any risk in waiting it out a little bit longer and see if that other version of the booster comes out with the 4 and 5 protection?
So I'm not holding my breath that that's going to come out here if they've already approved the other one. If you have the opportunity to take a quick trip to the U.S., you could get it that way. But as of tomorrow, all people in Ontario 18 and over will be eligible for the one we have here, which is the bivalent with the BA1. And so they're eligible for that starting tomorrow. But am I going to wait? I'm not, for myself, I'm not waiting per se. I'm going to wait so that when I have the time, I can go down to the U.S., likely in the next few weeks, to go down and get that. It'll be my 5th dose, but it'll be the BA4 and BA5.
Right. And what's the current recommendations on waiting, just from a booster perspective, between 3 and 4?
So that's a really good question. So usually it's about 3 months. And some are saying, even waiting a bit longer can be helpful. You've had now exposure 4 times. So, and it's only been 3 months that have passed. So you likely still have antibodies. You still have a lot of memory built in. We just are unaware of the degree to which you are protected over the longer term. So is it 6 months, a year, 2 years? We don't know that yet because, again, the limitations are that this is still a new disease. And so we don't have that track record. But I would say that, if you're to wait another month, probably not a huge deal because you've already had the 4 exposures. You likely still are protected. Longer than that, I would go, it's an unknown territory. So in which case I'd probably say, if you're inclined to do so, I probably would get it sort of around that time.
Okay. And as far as getting the booster in the States, it's walk-in?
Yeah, as far as I know. I mean, one of the funny things someone told me is they went in there and I said, did you have to pay for it? And they said, no, you don't really have to pay. I didn't have to pay anything. I said, well, why? How did they work out? Well, they basically said, I'm putting you down as homeless. So that's basically, so, which is kind of true. I don't have a home in the U.S., so kind of homeless.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Well, thank you for all your comments. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Peter. All the best. Take care. We're going to take a small break and come back with your calls. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in a couple of minutes.
gonna do. I'm telling you. Cause I ain't gonna be made to look a fool no more. You've done it once too often. What do you take me for? Oh, darling. There ain't
no freezing. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number, and you can send us your comments and questions at 580-580. And getting to those comments and questions, where in the U.S. can you get the BA and BA5 vaccination? Well, in Ogdensburg, there. I just did a quick search, Ogdensburg, New York, and vaccine, and there's Walgreens, there's Kinney Drugs, there's Price Chopper Pharmacy, there's Walmart. Some of them you have to book online, some you just call, but there's a long list, Walgreens, there's Kinney Drugs, it goes on and on and on. There's a whole bunch in the area. So it's just a matter of just doing that search and giving them a call and finding out what their policy is. But I know of patients and people who have already gone down and had it done. So it is something that can be accomplished. Another is Roberta from Hindenburg. Today, I believe I have another urinary tract infection. Luckily, I have some Macrobid on hand. Urologists have told me that as a type 2 diabetic, there's not much they can do to stop them. Isn't there anything better than water and cranberry pills? Having type 2 diabetes can increase your risk of urinary tract infections. Sometimes if there is a lot of infections that continue, you're getting many during the month, you know, two or three a month. And if it continues, sometimes a referral to infectious disease or urology is helpful. Sometimes they will have you on prophylactic antibiotics, that is taking a lower dose antibiotic continually in order to prevent the infections. So that's one of the ways to approach it, but really you have to speak to your physician about that. But if you're having a lot of recurrent infections and it's getting out of hand, that's one of the approaches that they will take. Another person asks, I have a grandson who will be turning 4 soon. Since age 3, it has become more apparent to us that he may be autistic. He checks just about every box for autistic characteristics. Can you tell us where to start with this? I feel he is falling through the cracks. The first step is hopefully he does have a physician that he is seeing. The physician can certainly make a referral to CHEO, or even there are pediatricians in the community in Ottawa. I'm assuming you're in Ottawa. Pediatricians in Ottawa that will be able to evaluate children for suspicion of autism and get the ball rolling with regards to evaluation, management, and treatment. So that's sort of where you would start with that. Okay, we are going to go to line one and speak to Bob. Hello, Bob.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks, Doc.
You're welcome.
My question's kind of odd. I came through a scan about a week and a half ago at the hospital.
Okay.
A major scan. I don't know. It's a new large machine.
Okay.
And they had, before that, they said everything, they can't find anything wrong with me. But then they found an aneurysm in my below my waist in one of the veins.
Okay.
And it's at a 5.5.
5.5 centimeters.
Means. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the surgeon told me, see, I don't want to bother him, okay? It's just that I've had headaches for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you have any kind of pain, you call 911 and get an ambulance right away.
Right.
And do not leave where you live. Stay close to home.
Right.
So I guess they're booked up, I'm imagining. But is it anxiety that's giving me the headache? Because every time I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, if I get a little tiny pain, is that what it is? And I don't want to call an ambulance
sure.
if I'm not sure it's something like that, you
okay.
know?
Okay, so I just want to have a little bit more information. So the aneurysm is in the hip area, right? You said?
Yeah, I think it's below the stomach.
Below the
they have to operate on two sides.
Below your stomach. So in the abdomen, not in your hip itself, but in the abdomen, sort of where your belly button is, that area?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So what you likely have is, if it's 5.5 centimeters, it's likely what's called an abdominal aortic aneurysm.
Okay.
Abdominal aortic aneurysms, the fact that it's been detected 5.5 centimeters is actually good. The risk of an aneurysm rupturing, because that's the main issue. It's like a ballooning out of the artery.
Yes, exactly.
And if it gets too large, what happens is that artery can break And it gets bad, and that's pretty bad. That's pretty much 100% fatal when that happens. But that only the risk of that happening occurs when it's more than 6 centimeters. So, and it's very rare to see that before 6 centimeters.
Yeah, they only detected it at the last point.
Right, but they are likely going to do surgery to repair that before it gets to 6 centimeters. And a lot of the surgeries that are done now are actually pretty neat in how they do that. They're really sophisticated now in doing them, and it reduces your risk pretty much completely of having that aneurysm become a problem later on.
Yeah, they said they're not going to cut me wider open because I'm 84 years old.
Yeah, they're going to go through your leg, I think.
They're going to go in with new technology.
That's exactly it. That's exactly right. And it's really quite neat how they do that. That being said, the aneurysm in your abdomen should not cause headaches. Right? There's no link between that. So the other thing is with regards to headaches is how long the headache is lasting.
Yeah, all day long. I take baby aspirins, and another one, I can't take baby aspirins normally, but I have to take it because he wants me to for blood thinning.
Right. You can use acetaminophen or Tylenol for the headache.
I do all the time.
Yeah, but, it's something to speak to your physician about. One of the things about headaches, too, aneurysms can happen because of a lot of reasons, but, smoking being one, a history of smoking, high blood pressure that's gone untreated for a while.
I don't have that. Yeah. So nothing.
Yeah. So, but they do happen, but the fact that it was found early, Bob, is actually a good thing. And I mean, it sounds like it's not early, but it actually, they found it before it got to a point where it was going to cause a major problem.
So is it a dangerous operation?
Any surgery you do has inherent dangers, right? But the fact that it is now minimally invasive, they're going to go through the artery to get to it, makes it much, much safer, right? Okay. So you don't have the same risk of cutting open the abdomen, trying to get to the artery, clamping it off. I mean, there's a lot of trauma that goes in when you go directly through the abdomen to get there. Now they don't have to do that. And it actually takes a lot less time. And you're also not in the hospital for very long at all afterwards.
Yeah, they mentioned a day and a half, I think.
So you're in really good hands because the people that do that here are really good at doing it.
Oh, good. I just don't want to bother the surgeon.
No, it's okay. You have an aneurysm, Bob. You're entitled to talk to your surgeon.
Yeah. Sorry to bother you.
No, you're not bothering either. That's okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. We're going to take a small break again, and we'll be back in just a sec. While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. Back. We only have about a minute or so and a half left of the show. We had one caller call in, said that they received a BA4, BA5 in Canada. That's impossible. Health Canada, I'm looking right at their statement from September the 1st, approved the BA1 variant. What they did say, quote, it was also found to generate a good immune response against Omicron BA4 and BA5 subvariants and is expected to extend the durability of protection. So what we have here is a BA1 version. They did not approve the BA4, BA5 version. Another person sends in a comment. Hi, I'm wondering at what age they can diagnose a child who may be mute. My 3-year-old granddaughter is very intelligent, does everything kids do at 3, but all the words she says are mama, dada, nana, and her dog's named Buster, but Busta, thank you kindly, April. What I would say, April, is that there are several things you can do. There is what's called First Words, which is a department of CHEO that has different clinics around town that you can self-refer. There's also seeing your physician and having her assessed by speech pathology. It's not something I would wait with. I would have her evaluated with regards to speech and development, but there are avenues to do that. And certainly your doctor can, but if you go to First Words Ottawa, do the search term First Words Ottawa, you should be able to get some information about that as well. And that about wraps up my show. My thanks to Steve Bunda for producing Sunday House Call. Thanks for your comments and questions. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Sunday House Call. Have a great week.
It's so important to make someone happy. Make just one someone happy.